Welcome to the Quarantine Book Club,
a comedy and book club podcast where we read some of the best
and worst
speculative fiction out there.
I'm Bob, a career theater technician and educator.
And I'm Rance, an English writing and literature teacher.
We might not know everything about these books,
but we'll damn well try.
And we're happy you can join us this week.
Make sure to visit us at www.thequarantinebookclub.com.
And check us out wherever you listen to great podcasts. Just as soon as I pressed record, heard the sliding glass door right above my head just go.
What's that mean?
It means a kid's going outside.
Okay.
At almost 8 o'clock at night in the dark.
Well, how about you go up there and dad about it?
I don't want to do that.
Well, then why you got to mention it?
No, because it's going to come through the microphone.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't hear it.
I mean, just because you don't hear a lot of things.
And right,
then,
but.
And then they're actually there.
What?
Yeah.
I don't understand what that even means. What are you suggesting? Like
you're always like, are I don't you hear your washer, dryer. I don't hear your heater. I don't hear anything that you have going on in the background, your unimportant life that doesn't matter to me.
No, I don't. I don't care about any of that anyway. And you know what? Here's the deal. If you got something going on in the background, and I don't give a shit because we got a shit podcast. And you know what? I don't edit. I saw a post today that I retweeted because I'm a big twit boy. From a great podcast called Friday the 13th. It's all about horror from the LGBT QIA+ perspective.
I hadn't heard about it before. I'm tuning into it this week.
No, me too. I can't wait. And they said they were like, basically it was a tweet about like, yeah, you know, all those times that you say that you're going to cut it out and post and you never do. And I'm like, no, I think a lot of other people put a lot more work into their podcasts than we blaming you. I want you to know that I'm not giving you a hard time for that the post.
You can blame me because I got to tell you right now, we need to do a perfect episode this week because I don't have time to edit it. I got to roll it around, wrap it up, put a title on it, put a description on it, get it up tonight because we're running 3 days late.
This guy's got to wrap a bow, twist it up, chalk the nuts, and sweep it down for it to online.
Add a little bit of Loctite. 1, 2, 3. My name's Bob.
My name's Rance.
And this is the Quarantine Book Club.
And this week we read, I got a problem. Can I really quick start? I got to start with something really important.
Yeah, yeah. I'm about it.
This week, we read a book that... You know, I got to stop the music right there. We read a book that I never remember the title of. And so I have to actively look up the title right now before I read the book, but I can't tell you the title because there's like 7 colons and a hyphen in it.
I know. It's called The Land Founding Chaos Seeds Book 1, a lit RPG saga.
The Land colon Founding Line Chaos Seeds colon Book 1, next line. A lit RPG saga.
Mm-hmm. Or as the Amazon thumbnail that I saw the other day said, Kong Land.
That I never saw that movie.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of... I didn't see it either. Who cares? I know there's a new one coming out with, like, Godzilla. Who cares? Who fucking cares, man? It's all CG trash. It's fucking CG trash. It's not, like, people in suits... this is not a hot take. This is probably a take by like 70% of the movie going audience out there. We're sick of CG trash when it should be real life trash. Give me giant men in giant suits. not CG dinosaurs fighting CG apes.
This is why Mad Max Fury Road is one of the best movies of the past decade. Beyond that, it's right up there as one of my favorite movies of all time, mm-hmm. because there's so little bullshit CG done in it. So good.
A little secret. I had a friend at work who we were discussing movies, and she said that she did not like Mad Max Fury Road, and I said that we can no longer have conversations with each other because our artistic ideals are so different that
so
we are
separate.
Incompatible as human beings.
Yeah.
If you don't like that movie, you're not my friend.
I don't think I discovered a real appreciation and love for Mad Max lore until probably 2014. Like, I was way late on it. I saw the movie, like, the movie was coming out, and I was like, cool, man, Mad Max, that's awesome. Like, I know about it basically when I was a kid and those times I watched those movies. But it wasn't until Fury Road that I started just digging deep into Mad Max shit. And you know what? I don't regret it because, for the most part, I didn't have to suffer through Mel Gibson.
Well, Mel Gibson's a horrible, womanizing, racist piece of trash, so who cares?
Exactly. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go on a tangent, but
it's cool. I don't know what to call this book either.
But the land summons the seed by Alaron Kong. Summon the lit RPG. It's before we talk anything about the book and Alaron, mm-hmm. if you're out there listening, I want you to know that I understand the pain of needing mm-hmm. to figure out a title, but my man, picking four titles, pick one title, not a whole bunch. You don't know what the hell you're doing. Just one title, The Land or Founding or Chaos Seeds. Chaos Seeds is a great name. Like,
yeah,
it's a great name. That's a good name. You could work with that, man. But don't just fucking pile them all on there, buddy. Like, I feel like he just went into a dictionary with a 10-foot-long stick and started swinging it. It was like, here's my title.
I have reasons why I think this title is the way it is, and I'll get into it when we start discussing the book. But the first thing I want to know before we start discussing that book is, how was your week?
My week was pretty good, man. It was pretty good.
Okay.
Let me think about what I did this week. Oh yes, I'll actually tell you right now. Gonna be the rarity here. Gonna be on the side that nobody likes. I fucking love this. This is this daylight savings time or not daylight savings time?
I don't know.
Here in America,
all I know is a spring forward jump back.
We lost an hour. It was spring forward. Everybody fucking hates it because they're like, oh, I lost an hour of sleep. Man, give me these late ass nights where I get to see the sun until like 8 o'clock. I already 100% feel emotionally better, and that's not me exaggerating. I really don't like the way I feel during winter. And this is not a thing until
like
being
anyway,
third
cold
until. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. And everybody gets sick except this year because we're all wearing masks and flu is down. Thank God. But COVID also sucks. I just don't like the way I feel during winter. And I don't think I've really realized that until the past 2 or 3 years. But this winter was particularly difficult because not only were we inside because it was cold, but we were also inside underneath the umbrella of this huge pandemic. So I felt very poorly this winter, emotionally, right. Physically. I didn't do anything really exciting physically. I didn't really take care of myself, and I'm reaping the lack of rewards of that now. But since we turned the clocks forward emotionally, I have been already just in a better place. I'm sure there's somebody out there who goes, Rats, you have this kind of issue. I just feel better, man. I just feel better.
Maybe you're just allowed to like
sunlight,
a different time of day and sunlight. Yeah, it's not a big deal. Not everybody's got to be a nocturnal vampire, you know, emo boy. You can fucking like daylight.
As you can tell, I clearly don't like being in the sun. I don't like being in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
At all.
Yeah.
But I like to see the sun.
Well, right. I mean, you are a pale vampire emo boy, but at the same time,
I can hear
you
your
can
cat.
Enjoy the
I can
sun.
Hear your cat rattling. I can hear your cat jingling. Rattling. It's the best
yep,
noise.
Jingling in the background.
It's the best noise.
Hey, you heard it. You heard a noise in my house that was in the background.
I I did. But other than that, other than feeling better, I also continued on. Some of you may know that I've talked about it here in the podcast. I have a book coming out, and I've tentatively said quarter three. I've actually changed. I have a book coming out this year.
Because you keep pushing it back. What are we gonna do for August? Okay, we already had July planned, and now I was thinking maybe this was gonna be August, and now
what for my dang old book?
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can push it back. No, it will. My actual intent would be to have it out by then. I have tentatively said Q3, quarter three. I had to do a massive rewrite of something in the middle that just, you know, honestly, it's our job. We talk all the time on this podcast as two white dudes about doing the work, right? Mm-hmm. And I wrote the majority of this book in 2010. I wrote it again. I rewrote big, huge chunks of it in 2018. And I really didn't realize until I reread this, like thinking I'm ready, right? That even now there were things in it that I didn't recognize when writing it were super insensitive. Yeah. And that was never my intent, right? I think anybody as a writer understands that there are times where the story tells itself and you don't think about sensitivities or the way that something could be perceived, that what you're saying is counter, or what's happening is really counter to what you feel. So I saw that. It stuck out to me like a sore thumb, literally like 15 days before I was going to have this thing out. Like, I've already had beta readers, all that kind of stuff. So I did a big change that's actually been much better and kinder to the story. But I decided it was better to make that change, better to make it now, for myself, my satisfaction with the work, and also its willingness to sort of invite people into reading it and not alienate mm-hmm. readers. So it's coming out Q3, but I pushed past this like personal upset and this personal frustration and just started fucking tearing it up the past 2 days and feeling really good about that. Not tearing it up like tearing up pages, but like getting down these rewrites that I desperately needed to have down.
Yeah, like tearing it up like Andrew WK says, tear it up.
Tearing it up, right, tearing it up. Yeah. Tearing it up. How was your week?
There's a lot of pain in my body this week.
Tell me about the pain in your body.
Well, some of it was self-inflicted. A lot of it was not self-inflicted. We started looking for a house, like, to buy instead of rent, which is a big deal in itself, and adding to this level of stress that the rest of the world is already putting out there. The housing market is ridiculous right now. It's a real seller's market, as people say in the industry. But what that means is that right now, interest rates are really low. So you're not paying a lot of extra as far as like for the house when it comes to what they're charging you to lend you the money. But the price of houses is up. So like they're the highest that they've ever been, and it's ridiculous. Yeah. Like houses that were 100,000, 125,000 last year are going for 250 this year. Like they're doubled in price. It's ridiculous. But at this point, buying a house is kind of where my fiance and I need to be in our lives.
Yeah,
and if we don't shit or get off the pot now, it's gonna eat at us. And we're not expecting to necessarily get a house. We're actually more just sort of doing practice right now and getting out there and looking at houses and putting offers in, knowing that we're going to get turned down for these offers, but also accepting that disappointment and getting okay with it, so that the day when we finally find the perfect house that is right for us, that is actually, they accept our offer, that we'll kind of like be ready for it and it'll be an event for us, which will be cool. Because as a 40 plus year old man, I probably should have done this years ago, but I was never ready to because I've been a man child and I've discovered in the past 5 years how well maturity is starting to fit on me. And I know that sounds weird, but I think there's been this large life change where, I was an angry asshole when I was younger, and I thought that was appropriate, and I thought it was funny, and it's not, and it's never been appropriate. And now I've calmed myself. Like, I literally went through, people tell you you need to get to anger management. Sure, if that's a thing you need, yes, do it. I'm saying I think you can do it yourself by taking a better outlook and being self
aware.
Aware. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously,
there are things that, like, you, obviously there are things that people do need, like, assistance with that they cannot manage it on their own. But right, like, like, being self-aware, understanding where some of your own personal limits lie, is merely functioning as a more informed person about yourself.
Yeah, yeah, and so that that includes, like, the work of anti-racism is an idea of maturity, of emotional and mental maturity, I feel like, and social maturity. I finally understand what politics is about as a human being who didn't and eschewed politics for the first, 40 years of my life, and finally feeling like it's a thing I need to be involved in, that it's not just a right, it's a responsibility. Because there's people, as a privileged white male, there's people out there who it is my job to use my privilege to help. There's no white saviorism here. We're talking about the fact that fucking dumb white people won't listen to anybody but dumb white people.
Right, right.
And you know what? Get if you don't understand that mindset, then fucking get over it. I'm not here to teach you that, because, like, you need to just do some self-introspection. But this is kind of this latest on a long journey of improving myself and becoming a fucking functional adult. Knowing the credit scores are fucking bullshit, but improving mine, which was a thing I never gave a shit about until realizing that I needed to have one. So aside from that, so there was that, like, stress that started causing me, in combination with some other physical pain that I had, I was eating ibuprofen like candy. Wait. And so my stomach was just a mess.
His stomach was a mess.
I got, I know I talked about having my toe, oh my God, the music is so loud in my ears that I can't concentrate.
His toe was in pain.
I got surgery on my toe, so my toe's been in pain. I got a tattoo on my other leg, so my other leg was in pain.
A tattoo?
Yeah. I got a tattoo. I got a Skeletor tattoo, which is really super cool. It looks great.
It's a
great
looking tattoo. That black must have been really hard to go through, by the way.
Everybody says that black is really painful. Black is no more, like, when you're doing large swaths of black, it's no more difficult than any other color.
Is that reality? Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's no different.
So then it's like an old wives' tale that black hurts more.
I think, yeah, it's the difference. The reason I think people think black hurts more is because the coverage is more difficult.
Yeah,
you can, like, black shows a skin break in black shows up. A skin break in yellow doesn't really show up. So if you're if you're doing a large amount of black, if that's not perfectly even, which means they're punching that color in closer to each other, and they're going over it possibly multiple times. It's why black also, like, raises and scars on some people more, because their tattoo artist goes over it more. But it doesn't really hurt anymore. Also, by the time my tattoo artist is a champ, and by the time I get to the point where I'm really sort of, like, fed up with it, he puts Bactine on it and everything goes numb anyway.
Oh, I thought you would say you'll be dead, so...
Yeah, I mean, I'll be dead too. But I've never gotten tattoos over such a large continual section of bone like that, and my shin still hurts. So between taking aspirin or ibuprofen for that and the foot, and recently I've also developed TMJ.
Oh, your jaw's hurting.
Yeah, so apparently I grind my teeth in my sleep, and from stress, while I'm awake, I clench my teeth and don't even know it.
This is me all the time, my friend. This is me all the time. I've done this forever. Done it forever.
It's the worst. I've got my whole right side of my face just is almost always constantly sore. It's like I've been chewing gum for a week straight.
Yeah.
I can feel...
I wake up with pain in my face. This is the this is the Bob and Rance Dental Woes podcast.
This body is the Woes old podcast.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, this is body, what we call body. This is body horror. Don't let anybody tell you that Fly, you know, and
anything Cronenberg,
District 9.
Body horror is just watching your own body, this vessel, this flesh vessel in which you were housed, watching it crumble and fail on you when it was already in a state of disarray.
Yeah. Yeah, I waited too long to try to get myself in shape as a human being, and now I'm just falling apart trying to hold it together.
Speaking of being in bodies that are not your own,
mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the summoning, Land of the Founding, : Alaron Kong's Wonderland, Fantasy World, Numbers RPG, Lit, Roll a Die, 20, Book 4.
Cool.
Let's talk about this. You already know my feeling about the title. This title is the most forgettable thing in the world. I can't tell you what the title is right now other than The Land, which is not just the most forgettable title. It's the most mundane title. And it is a lit RPG, which I'm mm-hmm. just really exploring this now. So I have to say in advance of anything, we are coming at this as tyros to lit RPG. Like, I don't think other than Ready Player One, you and I have actually read something that could be considered lit RPG, and I don't even think Ready Player One can be.
No, Ready Player One actually falls closer into the genre of Aseki or Isekai.
We did the same research. yes.
Which is pretty much just Wikipedia research. It's lit RPG. Apparently, it's not lit RPG if it doesn't have the numbers and the level-by-level progression of the characters in it. And I gotta tell you, as a guy who listened to it, it got pretty insufferable when I was listening to the audiobook. And there were times when the main character, Richter, leveled up like 3 times in a row, and you just heard the same words 3 times for about 5 minutes of your listening enjoyment, which was, you have leveled up.
Actually, before
blah, blah,
you
blah,
do
blah,
that,
blah, 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 before, blah, blah, blah.
Before you do that, you mm-hmm. would hear this noise if you're listening to the audiobook.
Yeah, yes, which
exactly,
was fine.
Exactly yes. That noise. Not just, this is a repeat. This is, I I think when they did the production for this audiobook and they, with the main character succeeded in an achievement or gained a skill, this exact noise would be the one that you would hear. And the first time I heard that, I lost my shit so hard because it was fitting, but also I didn't need it.
I gotta give it to him. I didn't mind that at all. I didn't feel like they Dirk Maggs'd the hell out of this thing. They added a few sound cues like that, but nothing over the top. No people drinking, no ASMR. Just a little bit of like sound to signify, hey, this character is leveled up. It really fits with the idea that if you're into RPGs, and let's say, for this book, online RPGs. I don't know if there's other lit RPG stuff that has to do with Dungeons and Dragons specifically, where it's pen and paper RPGs. I've read other stuff about pen and paper RPGs where the NPCs series, where like a bunch of NPCs become self-aware and they're on an adventure, and there's people from the real world whose characters are there also. But, like, I don't remember there being any specific, like, you've leveled up parts in it. So I don't know if lit RPG has to specifically also be online RPGs and video game RPGs, because I'm a human being that comes from a time pre-Final Fantasy where RPGs were pen and paper. So sometimes when somebody's like, I'm playing an RPG, I'm like, okay, are you playing
a TTRPG or are you playing an RPG?
Yes,
because
exactly.
Because now we're beginning to distinguish TTRPG, which is tabletop role-playing game, from RPG, which I think is all-encompassing.
Yes, yeah.
That's a great question, and I'm going to invite anybody who might know out there to let us know, because I'm coming into lit RPG really bare. I listened and read this book, and I'm really glad that I did both. Mm-hmm. So I want to show you really quick in my Kindle copy some of the things that you did not get a chance to see.
Okay.
Such
like
as
the formatting of leveling up.
Such as, and I'm showing this on the Kindle here, the tables. You cannot see it because of the brightness of my screen, but you can see the outline of the table.
Yes. Okay.
This is the per level stat points that he receives. As a chaos seed, you gain 6 stat points to distribute to characteristics instead of the usual 4, and it shows his total of 6 stat points. This is not abnormal in this book. If I continued flicking through, you would find that probably within 10 or 15 pages, we're going to see another chart, as I just saw there, continued charts. These are the boxes that show up. So it's this interesting choice that I will say that as a reader, I don't like, because I don't like too many things to break my language flow when I read. That is a personal preference. It is not saying that this is a bad choice, but this book is full of tables. And it's a little confusing because it's informational. It's informational the way a video game would be, but I'm reading a book. I'm not playing a video game. So that's one of those things that I think we have to put out there right in the outset is you are not just getting a beginning to end story. You are getting a beginning to end story experience, but it's expressed in these uniquely proto hypertext ways that you can't interact with, but that are meant to emulate video game leveling, and it's very awkward and strange to me.
As a reader, I'm very glad that I listened to it instead of read it, because yes, that would have driven me nutty. I think I can understand the draw in an immersion level like that for someone who is very into that world and lifestyle of video game RPGs. But for me, it feels a lot like, and this might be a controversial statement, like reading Tolkien or some other crap that I can't think of off the top.
J.R.R. Martin,
Lord of the
George R.R. Martin.
Yeah, what the hell is that called? Song of Ice
game
and Fire.
Of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. And sitting through songs. I don't want lyrics to songs in my reading. I find them uncomfortable and almost embarrassing. It's like being a 40-year-old man and watching an episode of a cartoon that I watched as a kid and being embarrassed and hoping that nobody's going to walk in on me while I'm watching that cartoon. It's
Would you prefer
not
they
fun.
Walk in on you while you're watching the cartoon or while you're jerking off? Which of the
while
two
I'm jerking
you
off to okay. the cartoon.
Oh,
Let's
okay, okay,
it.
That's cool. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I need me some Trixie from Speed Racer. Let's do it.
You don't. These things are intended for, like you said, immersion, right? A lot of people look at the culture of a world and they see it expressed through song. I'm very similar in that, where most of the time a song in a story does nothing for me, unless it is an essential part of that story. And I'm going to be that asshole who talks about popular movies really quick. The exception to this rule is something like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which uses Looking Glass's lyrics for Brandy, is basically the whole plot.
Yeah.
It's clearly a love letter to that song. But it's not, the song shows up twice in the movie and it's played, it's audible, the way a song is really intended to be experienced. And I think when we see song in, we only see the text. And like anything that's meant to be heard, we should hear it. Or like a game in lit RPG, maybe we should be meant to play it, not just watch as it happens.
Well, I mean, also, there's a really, one of the most, externally embarrassing things ever and awkward. And I say embarrassing, like when you're embarrassed for another person, it's that awkward moment of listening to a person who cannot sing, a narrator who cannot sing, read a section of a book that is a song on an audiobook. And that poor narrator is just like, I want this section to be over. I'm going to try to maybe, they don't pull a Rance and try to write a whole song.
I'm proud of myself for that.
Story. Yeah. But like, think about that specific moment. That's what I was that like in that terrible Halloween story, the song that band was singing, like to read that felt embarrassing. To think of somebody to like the person reading, like if I gotta give a thousand of credit to the 80s slasher librarian. Oh, yes. Because that dude read through the lyrics in those songs and didn't skip a beat, and he did that thing where he gave him a rhythm, but he didn't go over the top, and he handled it really well. I would have been like, I would have stopped right there because it's a hobby and not like a gig, and I'd be like, guys, I don't want to read this.
I'm just going to skip this part. I'm not going to put it in.
I'm going to skip these lyrics.
It's funny that you say that because I am always constantly wondering to myself if there are subtle modifications. And I think that this was the case in the land founding Chaos Seeds book one of Lit RPG Saga.
Good job.
Is that there are thank you. There are slight modifications to the text for the audiobook version. For example, when you hear the noise of success in the book, it is expressed as tring, T-R-I-N-G. Tring.
Tring.
Which is fine and cheesy, but at the same time, I'm so grateful that in the audiobook version, we just hear that because Nick Podell, I think his name is Nick Podell, is the audiobook reader. And he does, I think Nick Podell does a great job as an audiobook reader.
Yes. Yeah, I actually thought it was great. It was he reminded me very much of like Nolan North.
Quite a bit.
I think maybe it was Nolan North. Who's the other big?
Troy Baker.
Yes,
another big
Troy
video
Baker.
Game. Yep. Video game. Yes, very very youthful sounding, while at the same time really bringing in the emotion when he needs to. And there are a few parts of this book that I think are more emotionally satisfying than I expected, and then other parts where I thought they were emotionally daft. Richter, our protagonist, is, I think I texted you at some point and I said, I'm sometimes really angry when main characters who are teenagers are written by adults. And that's because I forgot that he was like 24 years old because
Richter,
Richter James. Yeah. The main character. I forgot that he was like 24 and not a little bab. Because his humor and everything else about him, he's basically 15 popping boners all the time.
So before we go into like full conversation about the content of The Land Founding Chaos Seeds Book 1
of Lit RPG Saga.
Yes. Thank you. We need to talk a little bit about Alaron Kong as an author.
Okay.
The self-professed father of Lit RPG, which I have discovered is a highly contested title. And there are people out there who refuse to give Alaron Kong his due as the founder the father of Lit RPG.
They refuse. I'm interested in this drama now. Oh, do tell.
Well,
do tell. I did not know.
It turns out that you created a little bit of drama on our podcast itself, because it turns out that Vasily Mahanenko, the author of next week's book, in 2013 coined the term Lit RPG.
Really?
Yes, in a brainstorm.
Okay. Not intended.
Yep. As Wikipedia says, in a brainstorming session with another writer, Alex Bobel, and Dmitry Malkin. Like, it's apparently has to do with some Russian stuff. It's all I know is that there's a whole. I signed into the Lit RPG forum and couldn't even get close to finding anything that I needed to find. All I know is that it is definitely controversial, and some people are mad at Alaron Kong for saying that he is the father and founder of Lit RPG because it existed before this book, apparently.
So I'm intrigued by that, and I know we won't come to a definitive answer. I know that I've seen two sources that say that he has called himself that, and then other places where it said he has been called that. I think I feel like he might be backpedaling a little bit. This is really uninformed. Alaron, if you're out there and you're listening and you don't fucking hate us already, please clarify. I feel like
please let us know if, first and foremost,
are you better than Vasily Mahonenko? I have to know, Alaron. And would you fight him with your fists?
And I will put my backing behind whichever one of you comes to us first, writes us an email, and confirms that you are not a men's rights activist.
Yes. Alaron Kong, Vasily Mahonenko, you must let us know if you are a men's rights activist or not. Can't confirm. Can't confirm without it written down. Mm-hmm. I think he might be backpedaling a little bit off that. Now, this is the first book in an 8-book series. He's been writing these since 2015. They clearly have a niche. The other
This is his 8th book in this series, right?
No, this is also his first book in the series.
He's gotten through 8 books in this series.
Yes.
And there are other series based also that he's also written that are Lit RPG books that are different series, because I was looking at his website. Huh. Dude is, I would say, prolific in the idea of, like, the amount. The amount that he's created. And I'm not necessarily saying that prolific is good. I'm just saying there are a lot of books.
Well, so I am starting to think I could be entirely off base with this. No research. Disclaimer, no research has been done, only presumption. And what happens when you assume? I make an ass out of just me and probably Bob.
Yes, definitely me, because we're in this together.
There's a lot on Amazon. There's a lot of pushing about him having, like, over, you know, I guess it's like over 17,000 positive reviews on Goodreads. I think Alaron Kong might be a self-published author at first.
Okay.
He's got a lot of that talk that you see a lot of self-published authors have. And I'm somebody who is going to be self-published, so I've been looking into this. This marketing that's very all about, like, leave a review, make sure to share it, let people know, which is something obviously that, like, as we were talking when we were talked with Premi Mohammed, that obviously is something that people expect of authors who have an agent and who are with a publisher have to still do nowadays with Twitter, but especially self-published authors, they're the only people really pushing their stuff. There are two habits that you see a lot of the time with self-published authors. One, this constant suggestions of please review. Reviews are the way that I really get success. Two, they're prolific libraries. Because a lot of the time with self-published authors, it is you pound the shit out, you put it out there, because why have one when you can have 5? You're not being supported by a publishing house in a continued process and cycle of promotion until the second book with contracts and things of that sort. It is you put one out there, people buy it, and they're done. You have to have a second one out there. So I'm really – and a lot of – successful self-published authors dump a bunch of stuff out there. Now, I will say, in fairness, so much of it is super good and actively massively high quality. In 2010, you wouldn't have gotten Rant saying this. But now, so much of it is really high quality, both the way it looks and even, like, people doing their own audiobook versions. However, one of the things I think a lot of self-published authors do is they produce, and every word they write is put out there, as opposed to picking and choosing because they have that time, I presume, mm-hmm. is there with a publishing house. A lot of these people are just pounding out books. They're writing a book in 3 weeks, and they're putting it out to like 5 trusted beta readers. A month later, it's out there. That is this process of work that I personally couldn't get into. I would be exhausted. But I think that's a lot of what's happening here, because the more work that's out there, the more income they're making. Mm-hmm. I also think that Aleron Kong's writing style is immensely simple and accessible, but also not hard for him to reproduce. He's not putting – this isn't poetic language. There's nothing – he's not putting any literary effort, and I still think that genre lit is literature. This is the most baseline descriptions you're going to get. There's nothing in it. I can't look at an Aleron Kong book and be like, that's Aleron Kong. There's almost no voice there, no personality mm-hmm. to the writing. And I'm not saying that's bad. It's just the nature of this work. It's, to me, evident that the plot and story matter. The language is the vehicle for that. And that's it.
It's pure entertainment.
Yes,
and that's,
100%.
It's totally cool. However, there is a level of, there's a level of forgettableness to it mm-hmm. as well. Like, in
Entirely.
Going through and wanting to talk about the content of the book itself, you're not getting anything in this book that, for me, is overly original. It's nothing. There's no original situations. There's no amazingly thought-provoking instances in the book. And that's okay. It's just not going to ever be one of those, you know, a classic. It's not going to be Stephen King. It's not going to be, you know, something out there that millions of people grasp onto and hand down to their kids. And I don't want to, you know.
It is entertainment for the value of entertainment alone. It is that game mm-hmm. that you pick up when you're a kid and you go to the Village Video and you get to rent a game for the weekend, and you don't go with the one that you've never played before. You just go to the one that's the game that's okay, because you know yeah. it works. You know that's the game you played last time, and it might not be different. It might not be unique, but hey, it's a game. Just like this is a book. If you want a book that is on its surface level, and it is surface level alone, you dig MMOs and you sort of want to have no control over the progression of a character while experiencing character progression, then pick up this book. Richter, our protagonist, okay, wait, let's step back. So much to say and so little to say. Let's talk about
Richter's okay. Nothing. One bad thing happens to Richter in this mm-hmm. book, and for the rest of it, he's the best at everything. He's a real fucking Marty Stew. Like, he's just, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to be a good boy at playing RPGs, which means I'm a good boy at figuring out how games work. There's almost this idea of, like, gaming it in the manner of when I play a video game, like I play a Mass Effect game, I know when I give a response to something, if I give this response, this is going to be the reaction that I get from a character. And it's like Richter is a person who's played enough games like that to know if I give this response, this is what's going to happen. So nothing bad can happen to Richter. And in fact, we find out that Richter is sucked into an online role-playing game, basically.
It's a Wizard of Oz story. It happens to be real. A lot of these Sky stories, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It turns out, in what Rance considered to be the most boring introduction of a book ever.
Oh, my God. Alron, we got to talk about your first seven pages, buddy.
Didn't bother me one bit at all. Listening to it, the first seven pages was fine. You couldn't hand the
exposition.
You couldn't handle the exposition the first seven pages. To me, it was setting up the world, and it was because I felt like I knew what this book was already going to be. Mm-hmm. That first seven pages didn't bother me because it was like Alron handed me exactly what I needed to know what was going to happen when I got into the book.
Because he doesn't want
you to be surprised by anything.
At all. With me, I think I went into it and I was like, oh my God, he's literally setting up the antagonist and the motivation, which is usually a good thing, but he just literally goes, here is your antagonist, and this is what he's doing. Like, not anything subtle. There's no, like, it's beyond the juvenilian aspect of Disney, and it's a Grand Vizier. It's beyond even that. It's not just like the guy rubbing his beard. It is, this is the problem in our world, and he is going to take care of it by doing this very specific thing. Now we need people to proliferate our world.
You can hear the villainous laughter.
It's so, I read it. I was in bed, and I read it, and I was like, "You gotta, we're fucking." I mean, like, fluff me up a little bit, man. Give me a little foreplay. I need a little bit of enjoyment before you beat me off and give me what is the climax or what will become the climax. Just let me question for a little while. Let me get into this book and go, holy shit, he's actually in a fake real world? Like, we find out from the beginning that they need, like, the seeds of human souls to come into their world through this video game. I'm laughing about it now. It's actually pretty clever. I think it's cool, but it's also not complex.
Do you wonder
at
if,
all? I mean, it could have gotten complex down the line.
We look at the Great Turf and we go, everybody asks, hey, the Great Turf, did you really know what book seven of Harold Wizard
when you were saying the Great Turf, I was like, is this another word for the land that Bob looked up? But I realized it was T-E-R-F, not T-U-R-F.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, the Great Turf and her book, Harold Wizard Glasses.
Yes. Yes.
And in book seven of Harold Wizard Glasses, did you realize that this is what was going to happen all the way back in book one? And of course, the Great Turf is like, yes, of course, I knew everything. And
bullshit.
Dumbledore was
absolute
always
bullshit.
Gay.
Absolute
yes.
bullshit. We
but
all know.
I think,
all bullshit.
I think this is a reaction to that. It's Alron is saying, I want you to know from the beginning that I knew where this was going to go always. So when somebody asks me, 15 years down the road, did you always know that the land founding Chaos Seeds book one was going to be the start of this giant lit RPG saga and that it was going to end up in this spot when you got to the land ending Chaos Seeds book 27? And he can go, yes, I did. Listen to the very intro of the series.
Beginning. The one that you forget. I mean, it's very similar to George R. R. Martin, who starts out with that stinger at the beginning of A Song of Ice and Game of Thrones book one.
Yeah.
Where we start with the attack at the wall, right? Like, you forget about that, but this is just pure exposition. There's no action. There's no conversation. It is just the Grand Vizier knew he needed souls. And I was like,
bro,
Can you give me some fucking setup here? Like, give me a little bit of aesthetic here.
I guess I don't really, it doesn't bother me that bad because, look, you're talking to a guy who, for several weeks, I followed Sir Patrick Stewart, the great Sir Patrick Stewart, reading Shakespeare sonnets every day on Instagram or TikTok or whatever the hell he was posting them on. And it was going to be this amazing experience that every day Sir Patrick Stewart reads a Shakespearean sonnet.
Yep, yep.
Except that shit's so fucking boring. There's no plot. You need a whole setup. There's nothing. It's so like, could you imagine reading a whole book of sonnets?
Get out of here.
What a snooze fest.
Get out of here with that. Did you just say what I thought you said? Were you going to fight?
Yeah, that's fine. We can fucking fight you out.
That there's no plot?
No, there's no fucking, there's not a plot that I care about in sonnets.
Absolutely, okay, there's absolutely a plot to all the sonnets, bitch.
Is it I love you because I'm a horny guy?
No, look it up. It's something about some old lady and some kid, and there's like, it's about love and shit, but like, don't come to my podcast for that. I'm trying to get to the beginning of this book because my absolute disappointment in the prose from the very beginning, I think, established my actually, the rest of the book got better from there for me.
Yeah.
The lit RPG aspects aside, I do think there is, when I play a game, there is a power in being able to influence or the illusion of influencing a narrative. You play World of Warcraft, you're not affecting the story. You're just literally going on a series of quests that have a story. You don't even read after a while. Like, you just click through that shit. But you play something like Mass Effect or Dragon Age or Jade Empire, like, there is a slight effect. BioWare did a great job of this for all the times they failed. Or like Cyberpunk, you're manipulating the story in some capacity. I do find it a bit disappointing that there is a linear story espousing game-like qualities in text when really it's just a clever gimmick. It's not even like a choose-your-own-adventure where I level up.
But here's the thing, man. It's right now it's 2020, and it was even a thing back in 2015. And I think what's funny about it is that as a couple of guys who were into gaming on Twitch and being whatever you want to call it hosts on Twitch, it's not a book for snoozy late 30 mid 40 year olds. It's a book for the current generation who will sit there and watch another human being play a game for hours on end on YouTube or Twitch.
That's a great observation that I did not think about.
Yeah, and that's cool. Like, it's an understandable level of narration for a younger person for whom that is regular.
Would you say this is a young adult book?
Maybe there's some. Oh. Well, the one or two problematic parts that I have a problem with specifically, I would say, are sort of, I mean, yeah, I guess they're young adult-y. I don't think it definitely doesn't market itself as a young adult book, but I think it could go that route. I think if you say it's a young adult book, your marketing sways a certain way, and you don't get the sales. And so you're doing what you think is smart. I mean, and like, you know, in talking about all these things, there's important aspects that we should talk about it, in which the book definitely deserves its kudos for, and that is we're seeing a level of a foundation of a form of lit that is being spearheaded by a black person.
Yes. Entirely,
you know,
so.
That's cool and important, and
well,
what
especially
we need more
too
of.
Especially too in a crossroads of two types of entertainment that black creators have so often been pushed to the side in.
Yeah,
You know, and being able to see Aleron Kong come forward and prosper despite that is really cool. And shows that there is obviously a great deal of talent out there that we need to be willing to provide, that we need to be willing to listen to the voices for.
And he's also no dummy, because dude gave up his career as a surgeon, I think, to write little books about people playing games.
He is clearly writing these things just to have a great time.
Yeah.
So I'm never going to bust his ass for that at all. And Aleron Kong, if you happen to listen to this, of all of the things that you can take away from us two assholes talking about your book in a non-spoilery way, is that it is evident that as you write them, as he writes these, that he's just having a good time writing the damn things. Mm-hmm. He's not putting a lot of thought into it. He's probably getting home, putting on some tea, drinking a beer or a martini, and just crushing out like 74 chapters. And then he's like, I'm going to watch an episode of WandaVision, and I'm going to go to bed.
Also, I can say this for your book, which is a thing that we can't say for a lot of the books on this podcast, which is we didn't hate it.
No.
You know,
I didn't like Richter, our protagonist, all the time. I didn't. Richter feels really 2015 and 2021.
Well, and I think Richter's also a guy who's playing a game. Like Richter is a guy who definitely is like in a world where he knows it's a game and he knows how to play it. And so he's going to do what he can. So he's role playing. Like Richter's role playing the whole time.
He sings. What does the fox say?
That is, but it does. I'm assuming it doesn't take place in 2005. It takes place in the near future, right?
Yes, 2030.
In the vague future where everybody is locked into a virtual entertainment space.
The Oasis, what? I'm sorry. Aleron, I'm sorry. I don't want to make it act like fucking, I don't want to, like Ernest Cline did this shit first. I'm sorry.
You've also heard. Wait,
I know
who did do this shit first?
I have no idea, but I'm looking it up now.
But, I'm looking it up now.
But Aleron Kong probably just wants to punch Ernest Cline in the face. You know what? I'd want to do that too, because Ernest Cline.
I mean, he's probably also heard that so many times. That dude is probably immune to that idea. Sorry, I'm looking it up right now.
Let me just read this while you're looking that up. This is the part of the prologue that made me just want to throw my book. Long ago, every member of the dark and light courts had been exiled to the small shard of reality. To ensure that none ever escaped, the universe had sealed the prison with a magical lock that would never rust and could not be picked. An entire world had been formed using small or large amount of every magic in creation. A world called the land. No. Since the world's creation, despite having vast powers, not one member of either court had been able to escape the pocket dimension. Like, Jesus, just dump all these things in here right now. Paragraph 3. Thanks.
What is the lock that is? Does he mean a physical lock, or is he talking about like a magical binding that's not really a lock with a key, like we're talking about a metaphorical lock, or
had sealed the prison with a magical lock that would never rust and could not be picked?
So are we saying it's a door and there's a lock on it and you can't like just hit it with a fucking hammer?
I don't think Aleron's trying to be secret here. I think just like you said, there's not subtlety here. This is the blood on the helmet problem. This is just, it's a real fucking lock with the real fucking pick that can't be picked, and it's not going
to
rust.
That's cool, too. I mean, that actually gives me a thing to, like, look at, though. That's an idea in my head.
It feels like everything is inside of the marble at the end of Men in Black.
Okay. All right. Cool. I get that. That's handing it a lot. Also, just different note, Ready Player One was 2011. Sorry, Aleron. Sorry.
Sorry. So we're going to make these references to the Oasis, and it's going to be painful for you, and I apologize.
That's okay. We'll step back into that world in July anyway. Don't worry about it. We'll hate ourselves enough then.
Yeah, this isn't really our last adventure into the world of Lit RPG. In fact, this year, I venture to say we're reading a lot more of these books where it's like people that are normal get launched into a Wizard of Oz world with computers.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean Tron?
I do mean Tron. And I couldn't help but think about Tron while I was reading this book.
Okay.
I do have to say that I think there is a presumption that a computer world within will look like the world we see on the screen. And it's this weird trope that I actually have a big problem with because it feels inauthentic. Whereas I think back to Tron in 1982.
Yeah.
Where we had very little understanding of the way a computer world would look. And right. In that, they created such a visually striking representation of this amazing world where a user was sucked in and became a program that still holds up in the 2010 Tron Legacy. Still looks great. Still is a great concept. That,
oh my God,
with
the movie
that
is 10 years old.
On my shoulder. It's 11 years old. Holy shit. Oh with my that, on my, it can go to fifth grade. With that on my shoulders, I can't help but look at something like in lit RPG where I see characters taking on the role of archers and warriors in these worlds and really like going through in a VR universe and experiencing these adventures. There's something about it that does seem a little, I'm trying to think of the right word, like, tired. It feels a little tired to me. Mm-hmm. It's always based on the same fantasy worlds. Like, we play an MMO, we play Dragon Age, we play World of Warcraft or Final Fantasy 14. All these worlds sort of look the same. And the land, Nadria looks very, Nadria, is that what it's called? Is the same as that. And there isn't really a personality to this world the way that when I think back to something like Tron, somebody being displaced into as a living being into a false world. There's a lot less character to this world. And that's not Alaron Kong's fault. I think he has to adhere to these expectations. But in the end, he's working with a palette that is tired in its own right.
I hear that. I also think that I have a real problem with the idea of, like in Ready Player One and in this book, this idea of the future virtual worlds that these people are in that are immersive virtual reality worlds, and that they're spending 20 hours a day in it. They're spending their whole lives in these virtual worlds. I got to tell you something. As a person who has experience with playing VR on the Oculus, you get about an hour into that and you're like, yo, I'm fucking done. I'm tired. I'm sweating. There's sweat all pouring down in my eyes. It's uncomfortable. My eyeballs are hot. My eyeballs are sweating. They're hot. And I need you to let me take a break. I don't care that we got to shoot arrows at a bad guy. Also, VR games are not that complicated. They last about an hour worth of gameplay, and then you're done them anyway. You beat the whole game in an hour, because that's what VR games are. So don't give me this bullshit about a whole online VR world, because it doesn't exist. It's not going to exist, because nobody can sit in VR long enough for that to happen. So do your research, bro.
Wow. Whoa. Are you directly attacking Alaron Kong's birth? Like,
and Ernest Klein.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
mostly Ernest Klein, probably.
That's the place where we have to like separate, you know, is that's where the fantasy comes in some regard, is that this world is way less fantasy now. What's more fantasy is that people can actually be in VR for this long. I didn't have too much. I understand that as somebody also who owns a VR headset and who has sweated in that thing so much that sometimes I don't put it on because I'm afraid of sweating. That it is tiring, and I almost feel like I'd be curious to know what Alaron Kong is writing about in book 8 and so on about this world with VR the way it is, with VR as readily accessible as it is now.
It's about winning. Oh, don't worry about it. I don't think that anybody cares at that point, because it's just Richter living in an RPG world doing his best RPG life. Because let me tell you about the stakes in Richter's life.
Let's talk about your stakes. Let's talk about the Richter's stakes.
If Richter dies, he comes back to life. He respawns, just like in most video games. But oh, there's a caveat that sometimes the land glitches and when you respawn, you just might end up forgetting everything. like losing your entire personality and not know, like you get amnesia.
Well, that feels a little like opposite Altered Carbon. And that's one of the things I've always wondered with Altered Carbon, like what's the risk there in that world? Like, you know, if you could just be put into a sleeve.
It's real death. I mean, the idea in Altered Carbon is that you've got this this little hard drive in the back of your neck, basically, a solid state drive. And if somebody shoots that, you're dead for real. Like, that's where your soul's kept.
Don't shoot me in my solid state drive.
Yeah, and it's called real death. It's RDing.
Oh, okay.
Man, we should get to that at some point, maybe.
We should. I would like to.
Don't worry, there's just children up above me. It's
fine. WTF, James shouted.
Oh, God.
There was one part where James talks about a girl's boobs. It's super weird.
Oh, no, yeah, I don't... That's my problematic part of this book, and we'll get there.
What is the problematic part? Because I want to talk about Richter for a few minutes. Okay. I'm trying to find the moment where we identify what the stakes in Richter's life are.
That's it. It's that Richter can die, and it causes him pain and some level of PTSD from getting killed, from like the pain of getting killed. But also, he could accidentally forget who he is. But that apparently it's very rare. But so now here's the thing that has set up from this book the fact that Richter dies once and he learns that lesson, and then he doesn't die again because he's the bestest. He is not going to die again for a very long time in the series, I don't think. And then what's going to happen is that he's going to come to a point at some point where he forgets, and his friends, all his companions, are going to have to help him remember who he is. And he'll break that part of the game.
By being superpowered, basically.
And so, like, there'll be zero consequences for him in this world. The problematic part.
Yes.
So towards the end of the book, one of the main plot points, we also go through this book as a series of quests in an RPG, where Richter gets a quest. That quest basically opens up a new quest. He goes on this new quest. It opens up a new quest. He goes on that next quest. It's just this series of you do a thing, it unlocks the next thing, it unlocks the next thing, and it's this linear progression as MMOs and most, you know, RPGs like that are. So he meets a character who he agrees to help free this guy, a bunch of... in this world, also, there's a very clear statement, which is humans are the race that is in control, and they have begun subjugating non-human races. It's a very clear social statement from a writer of color, which is important. And I'll even say it as we are people who are reading through, is sort of easily overlooked that it's a statement about the real world, because you just sort of go into it knowing that that's sort of like your writer's viewpoint from the real world making its cameo
making
in
its
the book.
Appearance in the right.
Yeah. And that's good. That's a good thing. But so he's going to help this guy find his fiance or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. And that's your last, like, near climax of the book, basically. And they find this woman. They do this heist where they break into this Duke's castle or prince or whatever the guy is. They break into his castle, and it is clear that she's been sold into slavery, and it's clear that she's been sold into slavery as a sex slave. And so it's very clear that this character has been the victim of sexual assault. And we never say those words outright. Like, Alaron doesn't say those words. Richter doesn't say those words. Like, they're never spoken. But you know it. And when you meet this character finally that they're saving, who is clearly suffering from trauma, they talk about that, and they talk about... they tiptoe around the reason for the trauma, but then within a paragraph or two, if not less, Richter describes the characters and makes describes this character and makes sure to make a point that he wants to talk about her firm petite breasts. And in describing a female character in a book, when there are no real female lead characters in this book,
right?
You've got your female character who is clearly victim of sexual assault and is then immediately objectified by the main character.
Male writers, let's just stop talking about boobs. Literally, if the word boobs or breasts are in your book, like, delete them. You don't need them. They're never needed. You know what? Maybe you're writing maybe you're trying to write a romance novel, whatever. But, like, in any other circumstance where explicit sex is not mentioned, you don't need to talk about their boobs. Because let me tell you how many times I walk down the street and I don't look at a woman's body in that regard. Every fucking day. Yeah. Literally, every day.
Let's reverse it. What if a writer introduced a male character, and this male character was the victim of a sexual assault, and he's been rescued, and then you're like, he had a very, very shapely and somewhat firm crotch. I could see his penis through his pants.
During, like, gym class, his crotch jumped around, and I looked at it all the time.
Yeah, like, that's the equivalent of it, and it's unnecessary. Now, we, as men, make breasts a sexual subject. Mm-hmm. They're not. They're for feeding babies.
Yeah, we hyper and over-sexualize.
Yes, and we don't need to. And so, yes, there can be an argument said that is like, oh, a female's breasts are not sexual, except all of us who like women of the cis male gender know that we think breasts are sexual. Like, it's just instinctual. We think breasts are sexual. And we don't need to. So, but also, let's not include them in this description.
We don't need to.
Character.
They're unnecessary.
What's her personality? Yeah.
Exactly. It's unnecessary in every capacity. Like, there is no circumstance in which the narrator or Richter needs to do this whatsoever.
He's also already, like, pussy hounding on other girls. So I don't, like, are you like, hey, here's my buddy's partner. She's a rape victim. She's also hot.
This is where
uncomfortable, man.
This is where this kind of stuff really needs to be. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong, especially if we're looking at digital publication. There's nothing wrong with this stuff being edited nowadays. I really don't think that. Mm-hmm. I think there's absolutely everything right in editing small issues like this from books. There is no mm-hmm. circumstance in this book in any regard where we need to be talking about a female character's breasts. We just don't have to. Mm-hmm. We're talking about it way too long even now just by talking about that we don't need it.
You can go ahead and do exactly that, and I don't need to make a fanfare about it or anything, man. And we're not talking about, like, Dr. Seuss in it, where you don't need to make a big statement about it. Just
update your new copy.
Cut that line out of the book. Yep. Upload, you don't even need to put it in the update notes. Don't care.
Yep. All that aside, I want to ask the question.
Back out of the room.
I want to ask the question.
Yeah.
Would you continue reading the series?
If I was bored and didn't have anything else to read.
Okay, cool. I think I'm about the same place. I'm not going to rush out and pick up the second book. It's all right. It's fun. It's mindless. And I say that with appreciation. I think a lot of people would hear the phrase, it's mindless, and they would think, oh, Rance is taking a dump on it. Not at all. I think there is absolute value in mindlessness. We're talking about the guy right here who I literally played a game this week for 3 hours that played itself because I broke it. And I liked that. Like, I didn't have to think. I want to play games where I don't have to think, as opposed to games, as you've said, if you've seen with me many times, I play a game with puzzles in it and I'm like, fuck it, I'm done. I don't want to think. So there's a place for mindlessness in writing.
Yeah. It's comfortable. It's, yes. And it's comforting. Even as a reader, like, that's fine. It's comforting. I listen to podcasts. Look, everybody else right now that is listening to this podcast, they're listening to a podcast with two dudes who take an hour and a half to tell you that a book is okay.
It's okay.
And it's not about us telling you that the book is okay. It's about everything else that's around, that surrounds it. And I think that's what this experience is. The book itself is okay, and that's fine. It's the idea of reading a thing that is different than your normal literature. It's picking a thing that is in the related to a genre that you love in your other entertainment and expanding that into the rest of, like, a different area of your life.
Well, this lands cool. This lands as well in this really weird exploratory, like, growing pains place where we talk about you know, go back into text.
My chair
and
just broke.
It's another time.
This is a different chair. My chair broke.
It's the second time in the quarantine book club that his chair is broken.
No, the first time it just fell down. This one broke.
Welcome back.
Wow.
Welcome back.
So I was leaning back and it just kept leaning backwards. Yeah, and that's a shame because I don't want to buy a new chair right
now.
Me
neither, but this one sinks now and then. I'm surprised it hasn't sunk today. It sinks
down
all the time. I saw my
life flashing before my eyes.
I'm sorry, buddy. Do you want to talk about it? Do you want me to be there for you? Okay, well, we're going to talk more about the land, founding, chaos, seedlings, with the... Anyway, this book is weird. It's this weird... It's like the awkward kid getting a picture taken of them in fourth grade. That's what this book is. It's not a game, but it's not directly just a novel. It somewhere lingers in this place where people talked about in like late 1990s with books like Hypertext and Hamlet on the Holodeck, which were all written about where the digital narrative is going to go in the future, where people were convinced that in anywhere between 15 to 50 years, we were going to have these life-changing narratives that we could influence. But the most we've really gotten out of digital narrative is Mass Effect and games like it, or even like digital novels.
Do you mean like Heavy Rain?
Yeah, something like Heavy Rain. Or even...
Sean!
Speaking of which, Sean, if you're listening to this, please press X over and over by text and let me know that you heard. But really, we've never actually progressed into any advanced new way of telling a narrative. And in a way, lit RPG, it appreciates that while never trying to go any further. There's almost more gaming and gaming nostalgia associated with choose your own adventure books than something like lit RPG. Again, I'm comparing apples and oranges there. There's no comparison between the two because I'm not being asked to affect the narrative in this book. But I can't help but think about other books that gamify in some regard when I read this. Or I can't help but think of Worlds of Power, all of the NES books where nobody dies.
Yeah, you mean like this book where none of the main characters die? Except for Jeremy.
Well, there's not really a
spoiler
threat for anybody other.
Spoiler alert, Jeremy dies.
Oh, well, Jeremy. Well, you know. Anyway, this has been the Quarantine Book Club podcast. Yeah, if you get a chance, check out The Land Founding Chaos Seeds Book 1 by Aleron King. It's part of the Lit RPG saga. The man's
Aleron
got eight
Kong.
Books out there. Aleron Kong, I said King. God damn it. Aleron. Aleron, I'm gonna need you to change your name because it's so natural to say Aleron King.
I know, but that's the only reason. It's definitely not because he's trying to gentrify your name.
I'm not. And if it came across that way, I'm a fucking terrible person.
No. I know you. Please, dude. Anybody who's listened to this podcast by now knows that that is not your point. I probably shouldn't have put it out, because now we're in a really awkward moment where we're talking about something where we're like, oh, should I edit this? Should I edit this part out of the podcast? I won't. Do you want to hit it with that?
Well, next week on the Quarantine Book Club, we are going to be jumping into another part of our Digital Worlds and Wayfaring Luddites section in March 2021 with Survival Quest, Way of the Shaman, Book 1 by Vasily Mahonenko. And at that point, we're going to see, will Alaron Kong and Vasily Mahonenko actually come together and fight each other? Will they be using boffer swords? Will they maybe shout at each other and use bad words when they talk to one another? Will Alaron win? Will Vasily win? Who knows? Check out on the next episode of the Quarantine Book Club, where, the truth be told, I'm probably going to like that book just about as well as I liked this book, I guess. Who knows? I'm going to read it, and I honestly forgot that was the book we're going into.
Are you going to actually read it, though?
Like, yes, I read this one, too.
2 weeks. Yeah, okay, a week this late.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
I've been sitting on this book for a week and 3 days. And I want it out of my brain. Okay, because it was just fine. Okay. The book was just fine. It wasn't great. But you know what? I've had to hold all of the knowledge of this book that is... it was really difficult to hold into my brain because there was not much there. Because Alaron Kong, let me tell you, buddy... You did a great job. You wrote a book. It was a wonderful freshman effort. I'm sure your next couple of books get a little more complicated, a little more interesting. But I'm ready to delete this one from my brain. Maybe we'll catch up in the future, pal. I don't know. Who cares?
Well, hey, you got anything going on this week? Anything you want to plug, buddy?
No, you could just check out our Instagram. It's, I think it's the at the Quarantine Book Club podcast, and like you can check out our Facebook. We've been getting some Facebook likes.
That's cool.
Our group is at the Quarantine. No, sorry, it's just it is. I can't even talk right now.
If you've gotten this far into it, just look at the fucking description. Look at the description. Twitter.
It's all in our description.
At the QBC podcast. Don't look for the other Quarantine Book Club.
Nope. You can find me on Twitter at Space Funky B.O.B. You can find Rants on Twitter at Violence Obscene. But where we'd really like to find you to find us on Twitter is what?
At the QBC podcast. Please give us a follow, because we got about 24 on there. We're getting close to 30. And let me tell you what, I love tweeting to 24 followers.
Do you want to, I mean, that's cool. People could also come to our website, which is www.thequarantinebookclub.com.
The Quarantine Book Club. It's got our list of books going up there all the way through June. I've got to update it a little bit still, but we're going to act like that's not a part of this.
Look, I'm going to go into episode 3 of everybody's favorite section of our podcast, too. Everybody's favorite part of the podcast, Sean Watch.
Hey, Sean.
I'm Bob, and this is Rance, and we love you. Do you want to go camping, buddy? Please let us know if you want to go camping.
If you want to go camping, say, yes, I'd like to socially distance camp. Send a text to Bob to Rance. There you go.
Yeah, that's it.
There you go.
And then we'll know that you listened to the podcast.
There you go. Proud of you. Well, man, I'm looking forward to next week. I'm looking forward to seeing how the... how the other end of this lit RPG saga, the father. Can we determine next week?
Yes. Yeah. Who the father of lit RPG is?
Yes.
So talking about that, just for everybody that's out there in the listening audience, because today, the date that we are recording is Wednesday, March 17th. And I'm going to attempt to put this episode out on Wednesday, March 17th. That
He's
will
not
mean
get if, it then, that's okay.
In 2 weeks, we'll be recording March 29th. So by March 31st, the last day of March, that will be the next episode in two weeks from today.
That sounds great to me. I trust you, and I believe it's going to get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. So Survival Quest, Way of the Shaman, book one. Read along if you want to talk about it. Send us some tweets because we'd like to hear what you have to say about the book so that maybe we have some subjects.
And I'm trying to get increasingly less spoilery about these as well. For some reason, I don't think, especially with some of these newer books, there's a need to spoiler unless it's really essential to our discussion. We got an hour and a half with these books at most. 99% of the experiences that we have with the books do not make it to the podcast because that's just the nature of it. There's a reason why people spend literal years talking about books. So are you getting anything super special from this? No, maybe the suggestion of it being a fun book that you might want to read, maybe, or a book to stay away from. But we've got Survival Quest coming up. I'm actually really excited, too, because in April, trying to get our friend Brian Hodge to come on the podcast to talk about his book, The Immaculate Void. And if you guys remember, Brian Hodge was one of the authors that we praised a great deal for one of his Friday, a Nightmare on Elm Street stories, which was a surprisingly philosophical jaunt into the world of Freddy. So I'm really hoping that we can secure Brian and maybe get him to come on the podcast with us. Can't be sure as of yet, but we also have another guest coming on in July with us as well. So do you want to talk about that really quick before we close it up?
Yeah, in July, which hopefully now we'll be able to update our website and get to that point. In July, we're going to be going back to the world of people jumping into virtual worlds. And we're going to read Ready Player 2 by our good buddy Ernest Cline. And we're also going to read the novelization of 1982's Tron, which is my favorite movie. And it is also the favorite movie of Chris Bond, who is a gentleman who is one of the members of the We Like Theme Parks podcast, and he's also one of the creators of Evil Dead the Musical.
I think it might be also worthwhile to potentially ask Mr. Bond if we could talk Evil Dead at some point as well.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean,
maybe a special episode of the Quarantine Book Club podcast.
That maybe in October, maybe we'll look for some Evil Dead related, even if it's Evil Dead related fan fiction.
Even if it's like, that'd be great. Or even like Marvel Zombies with Ash.
Yeah.
There's plenty of stuff out there. So, all right, buddy. Well, I'm Bob.
I'm Rance.
This is the Quarantine Book Club. We'll see you guys next week. Actually, I'm Rance.
Stay safe and do the work. I'm Bob.
Yeah, I know.
Be kind to one another.